Good. Thanks for coming. I'm surprised to have such a big crowd actually at my 5 p.m. talk on Windows 8. I've been going to a bunch of these breakfasts and lunches and stuff, and so far everyone I've talked to is still deploying Windows 7. So I'm excited. A lot of folks are here to hear about some Windows 8 stuff. So thanks for coming. How many of you have actually installed Windows 8 at all on at least one computer and played with it? All right, great. Excellent. Well, my name is Paul Gus Marino. I'm a PM lead on the Windows Developer Experience team, the team that's building the platform for Windows 8, and specifically on the UI platform. I've been at Microsoft for 10 years now, working on various UI technologies that whole time, this past 3 years on the UI platform. I've been writing software and apps basically my whole life since I was a kid, and really enjoyed being on the consuming side of building apps and UIs all the way from when I was using BASIC on my Apple II and then Pascal with old macOS stuff, if you ever did that, and HyperCard, and then HTML, and then Java, and then .NET. And it's been fun to kind of see the UI platform technologies evolve over the years and be part of it on the kind of consuming end of that. And it's been really fun for me to be on the producing end of that this past release of Windows, and so I'm really humbled to be here on behalf of all the folks back home in Redmond to tell you about the UI patterns and the UI platform for Metro-style apps for Windows 8. Just to give me a little sense, other than installing Windows 8, have any of you tried building a Windows 8 app at all using VS, the templates and stuff? A couple of you, a few of you. Now, how many of you have tried doing so, just so I understand the technology background of folks, doing so with XAML or .NET on that side of stuff? Cool. Have any of you guys tried on the HTML side with WinJS and that kind of stuff? All right, a few of you as well. All right, very good. Well, this talk applies to everyone, regardless of the technology you're using to build your app. Let's see if my clicker will click. Click. Yay. All right, so today we're going to talk about Windows 8 Metro-style UI. What is it and how do I build it? This talk is for everyone and anyone who's planning to build apps for Windows 8, regardless of whether you're going to use .NET or native code or HTML to do so. And the focus of the talk is on the UI of the apps themselves. So there's a lot to making a great Metro-style app. There's integrating with the shell, with tiles, with notifications, with those contracts that some of you saw at the keynote today from Antoine and Linda. This talk is going to be focused actually on the UI of your app itself, the Metro UI of your app itself, and how you make that. And my goal in this talk is to try to demystify Metro UI a little bit and give you some really tangible examples of what it actually means to make a Metro-style app, what are the actual UI patterns you can go and take back with you that you can try to, you know, start using to implement an app that has this Metro UI to it that's kind of in a much more kind of practical sort of way. I'll be covering kind of a lot of examples. There'll be a lot of material and stuff. Not much code, mostly kind of walking through a lot of UI examples and kind of explaining it and walking through it. So I hope you'll find it useful, and you'll keep up. I might talk fast, so just keep your ears peeled. All right, so what is Metro-style UI? If there's one thing I'd like everyone to kind of leave today with, is it's an understanding that it's not like some weird visual skin that makes everything look kind of square and brightly colored on a black background or something like that. That is not what Metro-style UI is. There's kind of a lot more to what it actually means. It's a lot more tangible than just a visual skin. Really, at the core of it, Metro-style UI is about a set of common user interface patterns. Now, I chose that word very carefully, patterns. What do I mean by that? Well, patterns are all those things that we human beings perceive about kind of the environment around us, that we kind of, you know, recognize and expect about using our computers. It can be things like, where do I find commands? Or what's the keyboard shortcut for a command? How do I work through lists of data? How do I select items? How do I work with text? How do I do it with mouse, with touch, with keyboard? What happens if I rotate my screen? All these things that you interact as a human being with your computer, and then you kind of come to expect it to work a certain way. You come to kind of recognize a certain kind of pattern to it as a human being. That's really what Metro-style UI is. It's a collection of many such patterns that together create an environment for computing that users find familiar and productive right away. And so it's very important to understand the patterns of Metro-style UI and implement them in your apps so that people get all those benefits and so that you kind of create that, you know, virtual world along with us of Metro-style UI. beyond just being a set of common user interface patterns, some of these patterns are patterns we've had forever in Windows that you all know and recognize, like buttons and sliders. We all kind of know about those things. But some of those things have been reimagined a bit for Windows 8 because we had to think about the new form factors, the new touch technology, and all those sorts of things. And then some of the patterns I'm going to talk about today are brand new UI patterns that are new for Windows 8 that we haven't had before in Windows. So there's a combination of reimagined old patterns and new patterns. And the set of common UI patterns are grounded in a set of design principles. There's a talk earlier today that kind of went into a lot of depth on those design principles. I'm going to highlight them a little bit today. But it's important to understand these principles because they both informed how we design these patterns, but also how you apply the patterns. And as you'll see later, how you might have to invent some new patterns yourselves, and you might want to use these same principles to kind of feel familiar and consistent with that environment. And we hope these principles that we use, things like pride and craftsmanship, do more with less, fast and fluid, help create an experience that's not only easy to use and consistent, but productive and that people actually enjoy using. And finally, Metro Style UI is something that's supported by the Windows 8 platform. We really built this UI platform to enable these kinds of patterns and this kind of Metro Style UI. And so some cases, the patterns I'm going to talk about map one-to-one to a control. So I'm going to talk to you about a pattern called Semantic Zoom later. And that there's also a control called Semantic Zoom, and you like plop that control in your app, and then you've got Semantic Zoom going. Some of the patterns I'm going to talk about are a little bit more nuanced. You have to mash up various controls together or various pieces of UI together yourself to implement that pattern. And so they vary. Some of them are back one-to-one with a control. Some of them are a mashup of controls and things. But in all cases, it's really things that are supported by the platform up and down the stack. One of the most common questions people ask me sometimes is, hey, Paul, can I build a Metro-style app on Windows 7? And the simple answer to that is you could try to emulate some of these patterns I'm going to talk to you about, and you could try to kind of make it sort of look and feel like that. But in some cases, it'd be very, very hard. And in some cases, it'd be basically impossible to do so, because that's what Windows 8 is. It's all this platform work that we did to actually enable you to have these patterns up and down the touch stack, up and down the graphic stack and composition and so forth. And so you really could sort of try to have a kind of visual decoy skin of it or something, but you really wouldn't be able to implement the full thing. And there's so much detail to some of these patterns and how they're implemented that it'd be an awful amount of work even if you tried, even without the lower level support. So that is kind of what I mean by Metro Style UI for this talk. It's a set of common UI patterns grounded in the set of UI principles and supported by the Windows 8 platform. But I think it's best to actually see it in motion. And so I'm going to switch over to the demo machine a second. And let's take a look at a Windows 8 app. And I want to point out today that all the apps I'm going to show in the demo today are actual apps that are available to you. I don't have any fake little demo app that I hacked up here just to show some point. Everything is a real app that's either installed on the box with a Windows 8 release preview that's available, you can go download now, or is available on the Windows Store to all of you. So everything here is a real, real app that I'm showing you that exercises these patterns. And some of them are internal apps that have been made at Microsoft, and some of them are going to be apps that just people out there made and posted up on the store who are part of the developer preview program with us. And so actually this first step I want to show you is the WordPress app. I don't know if you guys ever use that service. It's kind of a blogging and so forth service. And I thought the app they put together actually demonstrated a few key UI patterns of Metro Style design very well, and so I thought I'd use it to do this demo. So if you open this app, the first thing you see is this kind of giant grid of tiles here that represent the different blog posts. And they're kind of in these groups. So here's the June 12th group. Here's the June 7th group. Here's the June 6th group and so forth. And I can go on and on and on and on. And this is a very common pattern of Metro Style UI, where basically you have a set of data or information you're trying to make available to the user. And you present it in a big horizontal scrolling grid. And we call this the grid view pattern. And in the context of navigation, we call it the navigation hub pattern. And I'll go into more details on those later. This happens to be a pattern that's supported by the platform with a grid view control. So this was just putting a standard grid view control in here. You kind of could template some data, hook it up into this control, and you get this experience. And you get an experience that works with touch. So here I'm panning with touch. You get an experience that works with mouse. So I'm using the scroll wheel now, or I'm grabbing the scroll thumb. And you get something that works with keyboard as well. So if I keyboard arrow, I can keyboard arrow through these things. Interacting with the items also have a bunch of patterns to them that work with mouse, touch, and keyboard. So with touch, I can put my finger down, for example, on an article, and you see it looks pressed. If I slide my finger off, it'll cancel out of opening that. But if I leave it on there and I press, it'll go into it. Geek confessions, appropriate for this conference. Same with a mouse. I get a hover state. Keyboard, I can put focus onto it and hit Enter to open it. So mouse, touch, and keyboard work for all these patterns. You get kind of the smooth panning and so forth. So that's the grid view pattern. It's a very common pattern. Now, a second pattern you'll see here that's very common is something we call semantic zoom. So I showed you this is a really long list. There's a lot of content here. And so it'll take me a while to get all the way to the end. So what I can do instead as a user is I can just pinch, and I get this what we call semantic zoom view of that content. Whoops. So that just puts it all in kind of these smaller tiles. A single pan will get me through all the content now. And I can quickly then jump to some later date, like May 14th, and get to that group very easily. And that's called the semantic zoom. And that's another very common pattern in Metro-style apps. If I think about the grid view and the semantic zoom, those are two patterns that very quickly, if you adopted those patterns in making an app, it would already have a lot of feeling of a Metro-style app. And like I pointed out before with the grid view, all these patterns work with much with touch, but also with mouse and keyboard. So in the case of mouse, you'll see there's a little button down here in the corner, and I can click on that to zoom out, and I can click to zoom into something. I can also use Control Mouse Wheel for people who are familiar with that. And there's also a keyboard shortcut, Control Minus, Control Plus. So all these things you can do no matter the type of form factor, the screen size, et cetera, that you're using. So that was grid view, semantic zoom. And then the third pattern I want to show you here has to do with getting the commands, and that's the app bar pattern. So if I swipe up from the bottom of the screen, you'll see this bar comes up, which is called the app bar. And that's another very common pattern of Metro-style apps in Windows 8 that you see again and again. And the concept of this pattern is that your apps are really focused on the main activity you're doing, but you want to have other commands available kind of on demand. And the app bar is for that. And so, you know, while primarily when you're using this app, you're just kind of finding articles and going and reading them, if you want to go create a new post or you want to refresh, the app bar is kind of the standard place users know to go to look to find that kind of command. Again, it works with mouse, touch, and keyboard. If you just right-click anyone in the background, you'll get the app bar. That's the mouse way to do it. And if you do Windows key Z, that gets you the app bar as well for people who like keyboard shortcuts. So the grid view, the semantic zoom, the app bar are three very common patterns that we kind of you'll see again and again. And if you just had to pick three things, you know, to go do to make an app that kind of felt Metro UI-like, those are three, honestly, that I'd put high on your list of things to look at. Then the other thing I'll point out in this app is just as I navigate around to articles, so if I open one of these articles, what was a good one that I opened before? Over here. Well, I don't know. I'll just open this one. Is it June already? You'll see that there's a nice transition animation as you kind of go into the article. So it slides in and so forth. And all the navigation is in line. There aren't pop-up windows or sub-dialogues or tab property sheets or things like that. Everything's kind of in line. It's very web-like, frankly. And there's a nice transition animation. And these transition animations are things that are built into the platform as well that you can use, these page animations. So switching back to my deck now, that kind of gave you a quick little idea about some of the kind of patterns that we're going to be talking about today that are kind of Metro-style UI, and some of the principles I highlight a little bit behind them, and we'll go into more depth on those. But again, Metro-style UI, as we're talking about it here, is going to be a set of common UI patterns that are grounded in these design principles and are supported by the Windows 8 platform. So what are these patterns that we're going to talk about? Well, they're kind of fall into seven buckets that I think are especially interesting to discuss. Layout, Metro-style apps are these full-screen apps that work on any PC form factor. So that means big desktop screens, medium-sized laptop screens, small tablet screens, and yet they're full screen. And so how do you, you know, lay your app out? What are the patterns around laying your app out to use that space? Around navigation, Metro-style apps, we don't have a lot of windowing and pop-ups and that kind of stuff. It's a lot of inline navigation. What are the patterns around how you do navigation within an app and just get around the app? We're going to talk about that. Commanding, where do you go to find commands? How do you perform actions in apps? We're going to talk about the patterns we have around that. Around scrolling content, one of the most common things you'll have in any app is just like a bunch of content someone's got to scroll through. It can be textual data, multimedia, it can be data, a map, whatever it is. There's a lot of scrolling around, moving around content. We have a lot of work we've actually done in the platform and in the UI patterns around exactly the details about how that should work with touch, mouse, and keyboard I'm going to talk about. Around presenting data, So many applications, whether they're consumption applications or productivity applications, involve showing data, results from some SQL query or unstructured data. And we have a number of patterns around how that's done. And then I'm going to touch a little bit on just kind of essential controls, the everyday widgets that comprise, lots of pieces of apps, buttons and sliders and the combo boxes, et cetera, and around text editing, which has been an area of significant innovation as well this release. And as I do so, I'm going to talk about some patterns, some principles of MetroStyle UI that inform these patterns. And I think it's important to understand these principles for two reasons. One is how you apply the patterns. Sometimes you can just use a control and you're done, but a lot of times you have to configure the control a certain way or use several controls in concert to create a pattern. And so I want you to understand the principles behind the MetroStyle UI, because those will help guide you in how you do that. And then the other reason is that if I go back to that slide a second about the patterns of MetroStyle UI, this is a lot of we have a lot of patterns to talk about, a lot of things we've thought through, but really this is just the beginning of MetroStyle UI. Windows 8 is the beginning of a new generation of software, and all of you, as people who are creating apps, are going to be part of defining the patterns. And so we have a bunch of patterns we've defined here, but there are a lot of situations that we haven't defined a pattern for. And so some of you in your own apps are going to be the first to go and define some pattern about how a certain type of situation is handled in a MetroStyle UI. And in doing so, you'll want to understand these principles to help guide you as they help guide us. And so let me just talk about them and give you a little example of each one to give you a picture of them. And they're not quite as fluffy as they may sound at first. So pride and craftsmanship. This principle here is very important to us, and it really means it's not just enough for things to be functional, but everything about the experience, we want it to feel planned and intentional. So anything a user does when they're working with it, we want it to seem like that was intentional and kind of by design. It's not good enough if it's just like, well, there's one way to make it work, and then other things you do, it kind of feels broken and doesn't, falls apart and doesn't work. Any way a user kind of tries to do something, it should work and feel like it was intended to work. And I think an example of a pattern I'll talk about where we really exemplify that is the scroll view pattern. So you'll see the work we did with panning and scrolling, how all the different things people might try to do, there's something really logical and kind of designed, that intentional, that feels like it happens using that pattern if you implement it. Fast and fluid. This one here is a little bit of a dichotomy, because sometimes fast means stark, just quickly flip the screen over. And sometimes fluid means slow. Oh, it's taking its time, to animate that thing. And so, but we want to hit both those points, fast and fluid at the same time. And we think, that's an important kind of balance to strike to make apps that people really are going to like. And I think an example of something, a pattern that I'll talk about later that implements this kind of principle is the list view and grid view patterns. And so you'll see some of the kinds of animations that are built into them, like when you delete items. And if you want to just make deleting as fast as possible, you just show the list before the item was deleted and then show it after the item was deleted. But that makes it hard for people to tell what just happened, what item got deleted exactly. And so instead you'll see this little animation that happens there. And I think that's a great example of fast and fluid, where you can kind of quickly see the item disappear and the other item slide into place in a way that's fast and fluid and helps you understand and kind of keep context of what's going on. Authentically digital. So this is a principle that said, hey, look, these are computers, and people have had computers for many years now, and so we're kind of past the point of trying to emulate real-world metaphors all the time. So if you guys remember when Windows 95 came out, there's this desktop paradigm. We said, well, let's pretend it's a desktop, and there's a recycling bin, and this kind of stuff. And people don't need all those metaphors now anymore, because they kind of know how to use computers. They've been doing that for a long time. And instead, we want to focus on, with this medium that we have, what's really the best experience we can give people, as opposed to something that tries to emulate the real world. An example of that, I think, is semantic zoom, where, in the real world, if I had this long list of content like I showed you before, I couldn't just pinch in and just get a condensed format of it. Like if I pinch, you get all crumpled up or something. It's not trying to do a real world metaphor of it. It's trying to do something that's really efficient using the gestures and the things you can do on the computer, and just makes a good experience. That's authentically digital. Do more with less. This is really the principle we have around designing things with a specific purpose in mind. Any of you who've done UI design for a while know that every single extra little feature you add distracts somebody and makes somebody's life worse. Like every little extra button and widget and doodad and thing you try to add to your app's UI to try to help some extra scenario gets in the way of something else someone's trying to do with the app. And so it's this principle is really about making apps that have a clear kind of focus to what they're about and really streamline so people can be really productive and efficient doing that thing while still having the other things available. And so a pattern is the app bar, I think, that helps, you know, helps you do this and realize this in apps. And then finally, with this principle of win is one, which for us was very internally useful as we were designing and developing these patterns. But I think externally to all you folks really has two things that I think you should take away from this principle. First is your app doesn't have to do every single last thing itself. There's going to be a lot of other apps. We built this whole system of contracts into the Windows 8 experience so that you can have one app communicate to another app. You can share through another app. You can be a target of a share. You can use a picker to pick data or get data saved into you or out of you and so forth. And so your app doesn't have to do everything inside itself. You can actually use other apps to kind of be a fabric, you know, that together, you know, you deliver the end-to-end experience to people. And then the other part of win or lose is one is that, you know, we're here to help you. Like those of us making the UI platform, you know, of Windows and Microsoft, we're here to help you make great apps. Like that's what our job in life is right now. And so we're trying to make great controls and a great UI platform for you. So take advantage of it and use it. That way you can focus the time in your app on this unique value that your app is trying to deliver rather than kind of re-implementing, you know, more fundamental and basic concepts of the system. Take advantage of the ones that we built for you, and that way you can, you know, focus your energy on something that makes your app unique, and you don't have to bother. And on that point, let's talk about the platform. So I said it's these principles, these patterns, you know, grounded in these principles, supported by this platform. For Windows 8, we took a pretty novel approach to the UI platform. We said, hey, people should be able to build their apps using the technology and skills and tools they already have. And so that meant, hey, if people are coming from a XAML and .NET background, they're using Silverlight or WPF, people should be able to use that. If people are coming from an HTML background and using JavaScript and web technologies, they should be able to use that. And so the way we delivered this is we looked at each of those kind of stacks and we figured out the right way to evolve them and reimagine them and move them forward. So for XAML, whenever there was a concept that already existed, a UI pattern that already existed, we kind of brought forward that API. So the button is still the button. Now the button in Windows 8 is enhanced. It works with touch, it has new visuals and animations and so forth, but it's the same button kind of API brought forward from, you know, what you're familiar with in WPF and XAML. Now there's some new things like semantic zoom. It's a brand new XAML control. You don't have that one in Silverlight or WPF. For those of you using HTML and JavaScript, similar concept. When possible, we implemented web standards or improved our implementation of web standards to give you those features that you needed. A simple example of that is all the panning and zooming stuff is actually the HTML CSS overflow. So if you're familiar with CSS overflow markup, that's what you do to get scroll views for an HTML app. Yet we've, behind the scenes, totally, you know, rewritten that whole thing to use our whole new direct manipulation and direct composition and other technologies that give you this great experience. For some things, for HTML developers, because there's this whole world of standards and kind of what people expect to be in HTML versus in JavaScript, if you're coming from that background, we found that for some things, it made sense to implement them right into HTML. For some things, it made sense to deliver them to you as part of a JavaScript library. And so for those of you who are building apps with HTML and JavaScript, we're actually making a very lightweight JavaScript library called WinJS, or Windows Library for JavaScript, available to you with Windows 8. And it gives you more of the controls and more of the patterns, style sheets, and some other kind of infrastructure pieces you'll want. But in any case, whether you're using XAML or HTML, C#, C++, or JavaScript, it's all powered by that same underlying, you know, Windows 8 platform. So the same graphic stack that renders that text is rendering that text. The same touch, you know, input with the same gesture recognition algorithms is all the same. The same spell checking dictionary in the text boxes, you know, with the same exact algorithms and so forth. It's all this one Windows 8 platform. And just to illustrate that, I just want to use an example of a toggle switch. It's just one simple little control that exists in both XAML and for HTML as well. For those of you who use XAML, you're familiar with kind of how this works. You have a way of declaring in your markup you want a control, a way of setting options or properties on the control, a way of giving a unique identifier, and then you also have a way of doing event handling on it. So you can go and grab the myToggle.toggled and add a new routed event handler to call your toggle Wi-Fi function. Okay? So if you're familiar with XAML, this should be pretty kind of 101 for you. So keep your eye on this. I'm about to change it to the HTML slide now. So in the HTML version, here's how you do it. Very similar kind of thing. There's a standard pattern we've defined for these WinJS JavaScript controls for how you kind of instantiate the control, how you set options on them. It's just a JSON notation right there. It's a JavaScript object. How you put identifier on it. It's the web standard ID attribute. And then how you do event handling. It's the standard add event listener type of code, if you're familiar with that from web programming. So whether using XAML or HTML, you can do the same kinds of things, use the same kind of UI platform constructs, powered by the same platform. All right. Well, that's enough kind of overview of the overall stuff. Now we're going to start diving into these specific patterns and give you kind of real knowledge about each of those. So we're going to start with layout patterns. So why do layout patterns matter? Well, Windows 8 apps are these full-screen immersive apps that run across a range of form factors, tablets, desktops, laptops, and so forth. And they're expected to take up that space. There's also the fact of portrait versus landscape orientation. So if you have a tablet, sometimes it'll be in portrait, sometimes it'll be in landscape. And there's also there's various view states that now exist. So if you saw the keynote, did everyone see the keynote this morning? Did most of you see that? So you saw that there's this idea of snapping apps. So you can have an app snapped and then another app next to it, and that's called the filled view and the snap view. And so that's another kind of view state you have to handle as an application. And so for all those reasons, kind of how you lay out your app is very important and something you have to think about. I just put my clicker down somewhere. Here it is. And so here's some of the patterns that have kind of emerged that we've defined kind of for Metro-style UI and supported. Two big ones you want to think about when you talk about the different size screens and different DPI screens is fixed versus adaptive. And this simply means if your app layout tends to be something where you've kind of carefully crafted this UI to look a very specific way, and there's a very specific kind of size and dimensions and stuff to it that makes sense, you'll want to use the fixed pattern and basically just kind of stretch up the UI. So a simple example of that is, like, imagine you're a chess game. Like, chess is always going to be 8x8, you know, grid of squares. You're not going to add more squares if you have a bigger screen. And so just stretch that up. That's the fixed pattern. The adaptive pattern is where, as you have more space, you show more content. And sometimes you use a concert, you know, these in combination in an app if you have different parts of your UI. But an adaptive layout, show more content. So if you have a very data-driven application with very structured kind of data, this tends to be the right thing to do. If you have more of a carefully crafted UI where it's like positioning every single thing is perfect, fixed layout tends to make sense to do. And then the other pattern I'm going to talk about is filled versus snapped, and how even when your app is snapped, you still want it to be functional. It's not like just stretch your app down and put it in some weird, like, super stretched, like it was a little rectangle in the middle of a pane kind of thing. Don't do that. Like, think about what makes sense for a user when your app is in that state and still show kind of valuable content there. And let's, again, jump to a demo to see these in action. And these are from two apps that are available on Windows RP to anyone who has it there, the weather app and this fun little game called Pirates Love Daisies. All right. Let's go back here. So, and I'm actually going to use the simulator. Just kill this app a second. I'm going to use the simulator to demo this so that you can kind of see all this form factor stuff happening. Wow, that's faster than I expected. All right, so I'm going to open the weather app. This is one of those apps. And here, just so you can see, you can click on this little button here to see the resolution you're at. Right now I'm running at 1366 by 768, so that's what the simulator is emulating. This is an interesting app. It has kind of a very photogenic kind of screen here. Then it has a list of the hour-by-hour weather forecast. And you can see there's so much data there, they couldn't fit it all. So you have to scroll up and down if you want to see it all. Then they have a bunch of tiles of maps, Doppler maps, and all that kind of stuff. And then they have like this graph thing. Okay, so this is an app that has several different types of content all inside it. Let's see what they do when you grow to a huge screen. All of a sudden, I'm on a 27-inch screen. Well, ta-da. Thank you, simulator. Well, you see, they actually did some different things to adapt their app to fit to that bigger size. In the case of that big thing where they had the image and just the five-day forecast, they let that image grow and take up the whole space. So they had a nice high-resolution image, so you have a nice, crisp viewing there. On the other hand, where they had this list, they grew it. In fact, you can no longer pan that list up and down. It's unnecessary because it already has all the items in there. And so they're able to do that easily using a scroll view control. That's one of the things the platform has. Often it's a good trick for these adaptive layouts is just use a scroll view control, and you can make stuff scroll if you have less space and then just take up the space if you have more space. In the case here of this grid of tiles, they used a grid view. And so what that does is it knows how to rearrange your tiles to optimally fit in the space you have available. So they had more space for it, so it kind of laid them out, taking up more space. If it had less space, they'd be kind of, you know, stretched out the other way. Okay? So that's an example here. If we go back down to our regular size, and then we're going to rotate the app, let's see what happens on rotate. Ta-da! Here, the same thing. They kind of grew this layout here because it's the scroll view, so that kind of... I see what happened. I have to use this. Same thing happened with these tiles here. They rearranged them because they used a grid view there. And here, they just chose in their own layout pattern to kind of rearrange those five-day forecasts. They said, look, I have more space now up and down. They kind of rearranged the five-day forecast that way. So those are some of the things that you'll want to do yourself when you're dealing with an app being rotated, and then you can use various platform features to help you do scroll views, grid views, and then just the layout capabilities and the view state management that's available in both XAML and HTML. Then what I want to do here is launch this game to show you a fixed one instead. So here we go. Here's Pirates Love Daisies, a fun game. And now what you'll see in this game here, if I start the game, here we go, is if I make the screen really big, well, they have a very specific map layout and very specific kind of formatting of that. So they don't want to kind of stretch that, and they don't want to rearrange that or something like that. And so instead, what they did is they kind of centered it in a fun way, but it kind of grew out. So now you see this kind of cool octopus dude, and there's like more little falling stuff in the background and stuff. So they did kind of something nice, you know, as they grew to that bigger size, even though it's kind of still a fixed layout application. And if we go back down to kind of a smaller size, and then if I pull in using snapping, I kind of pull in the weather app, we can see that they resized this again, so they support the full state correctly. They just cut off like the pirate dude on the side, but they didn't cut off the map. They kind of made sure to fit still in that screen size. And then here you can see the weather app did something reasonable. They didn't just show you some like weird crop down weather thing. They said, well, you know what, we're just going to show you. And they don't have the full app there, so I can't like pan horizontally and see all that extra content. They said, you know what, the snap state of our app is just going to have the weather forecast for today, because that's the main thing people want to see. So it's still something useful and designed looking, but it uses that snap state. And if I flip this around to make that the big app and this the small app, well, then the weather app starts giving me all the features of it. And the game decided, you know what, in this snap state, I should just show you, I should just pause the game at this point. Because the user's probably not still playing the game when it's kind of snap like that. I should just pause it. That's probably what they want. But it still looks nice and designed and so forth. So those are some examples of how to think about laying out your application that are supported with the platform. So make use of the space. Use fixed layout for more rigid, highly designed content. Use adaptive layouts for the flexible, data-driven content. We talked about using scroll views and grid views to help you do so. Support snap state as a fully functional mode of your app. Consider supporting layout where applicable. Again, use that platform support to do so and do so with high performance. All right. Next is navigation patterns. So there are no windows in these metro-style apps. We talked about laying out your app. There are no windows in these metro-style apps, so they're kind of all this inline navigation. What are the patterns that have been defined around inline navigation for metro-style apps? There are really three key ones that you'll see over and over and over again in apps that you'll want to consider taking advantage of when you're using an app and help you understand the UI language of the system. One is what we call the hub pattern. And this one here is really for just having... kind of, if you have a lot of data, for example, a database, the store is an example of this, you want to kind of show them little chunks of the data and then let them dive in deeper and deeper into the data until they get to individual records. Or just any kind of view where you just have a lot of large collection of content you want to have little sections to. The navigation bar is a UI pattern that you'll see in a number of apps for just switching between screens or states of your app. So sometimes there are apps you just have like totally different kind of states of your app or screens in your app, and you can use the nav bar as a quick way to switch between those. And then a common thing you'll see everywhere is this little back dude. Back just shows up again and again in all these apps and all the patterns that you might be using around navigation. And so we're going to see some demos of these in use using the store and the finance app. So let's go look at those. All right, so we'll open the store first. Here's the store where all our apps are. So here's the hub pattern. Let's start with that one. This is very, very common. You'll see this again and again. If you've used the VS templates, they have the hub. If you use the grid template, that tends to do the hub pattern kind of built in there. So what is the hub pattern? It basically says, look, I've got all this stuff the store wants to show me, all these apps. It's going to show them to me in these groups. So I have a spotlight group here, a games group here, a social group, an entertainment group, and so on and so forth. And underneath that group heading, it just shows me some of the top highlights of that group. In this case, they're all kind of these tiles. I'll show you a different example of the finance in a second. But I just kind of can kind of see all these different kind of the sections of the app, the content. I can just kind of pan through it easily, or I can scroll, you know, with mouse and scroll wheel and so forth. This is kind of, if you think about Win32, you might have used tabs here, to be honest, right? If I was a Win32, you know, making a Windows app, you know, years ago, I probably would have used tabs. I would have had the games tab and the this tab and then that tab and the other tab. But instead, for Metro-style UI, we're saying, no, don't do tabs. Just let people just pan through it. It's very natural. It's very fast and fluid. It's very kind of efficient to get through it. And it's actually a model that's nice because it extends well to seeing more content. So right now, I'm just seeing kind of the preview of each of these sections. But I can actually click on this games, on the titles, most of these titles interactive, to go see all the games. Okay, so I can dive in to see all the content. So it gave me a little preview there, but I can click on the header to see all the content. And you see this again and again and again in apps. These kind of groups like this with these titles. You see a preview of the stuff there. You can click on the title and see all the content that hides kind of within there. This is the hub navigation model. And then you can usually go an extra level in again to see the actual, you know, leaf node item, if you will. So that's kind of the hub model. And in this case here for the store, they actually implemented it using the standard grid view control. Come on, store, be online. They implemented it using the standard grid view control. Ooh, yeah. And the standard grid view control supports a feature we call cell spanning. So you can even create pretty fancy looking layouts with it. So some of these cells are bigger than others. It's not just a standard like 2x2, you know, grid or something. Some of the cells are take up, you know, a few cells and so forth, like merging cells in Excel, okay? So they could create this very easily just using that standard grid view control. That's a great way to implement the hub pattern. I also want to show you the navigation bar pattern in this app. So here in the store, the main thing the store is about is like finding and downloading new apps. But they also have a section of the store where they're like your apps that you've previously purchased, because you have the same apps on all the different computers you go to. So I have like several different Windows 8 PCs now, and so I can go to each one and see, oh, what are all my apps that I have? So I can go to the Your Apps screen. And the nav bar is kind of a way to switch between those two different kind of whole sections of the store UI itself, okay? So you might use the nav bar to switch between two whole different sections of content, whereas the hub pattern within like one big collection of content that you're trying to let them kind of, you know, browse through. All right, so that's the nav bar. And you implement that actually, the best way to implement that is using the app bar control. The app bar control knows how to swipe in from the edge and all those keyboard shortcuts and stuff. And so you just implement the nav bar using the app bar. Kind of control. It's a more general control than the name might suggest. And this kind of relates again to that do more with less kind of principle. All right, so this, we just saw this here, and of course you saw back, you know, in all these cases. And as I went back, you always saw a nice kind of animation of the page coming in and with these page transition animations and so forth. And so that's an important part of the pattern, is having back and using the page transition animations that are part of the platform as you do so to help that look nice. Now let's switch over to the finance app, which is another app that implemented the hub pattern. But I wanted to point them out because they did something a little bit different. I want to show how these patterns are a little bit flexible, but you still get the user still gets the same concept across. So here in the finance app, it's also a hub pattern. There's this today section, there's a indices section, there's a news section, there's a watch list, you know, market movers, etc. But these guys here who made the Bing Finance app, the grid view wasn't actually enough for them to build their UI, because they didn't want to just have a grid of stuff, of data. They wanted to put like rich interactive graphs here that I can click on and, you know, see that the market is going up or down or whatever it's doing. And they wanted to have that kind of rich, you know, thing in there. So they actually had to implement this more themselves. They couldn't just use a grid view control to do that. They actually had to like lay out these groups and put these headers there and so forth. But it's the same, you know, design pattern. And it's still supported by the platform, so you use the layout features of the platform, and you use the scroll view. So you still have that nice, smooth panning kind of left and right as you do so, and the keyboarding, mouse, and so forth. And you can still click on the links and navigate into it, et cetera. But they implemented it more of it themselves. It wasn't just a grid view in this case. So you can see how that pattern, you can, you know, depending on the extensibility you need of it, you can go further or more yourself. And they have the same thing. They also have a nav bar here. So there's the today view has all these different sections, but I can also go to like some currencies section of their app, and then they have, you know, a bunch of currency information and so forth, okay? So it's a common pattern of apps. Have a nav bar to switch between main sections of the app, and then use the hub pattern within each section to let you kind of browse through that content that might may be hierarchical even. And again, in all cases, there's this back concept. All right, so those are navigation patterns. And let's just go back to the deck. All right, use that hub pattern for those large collections of content. You can use a list view or grid view to implement the hub pattern. If it's very structured data, if it's more loosely structured data, you might have to build your own visual representation of it, but still use a scroll view to do so. Use the nav bar to jump between main sections. You can use the app bar control to do that. Keep, you know, have a back button, have a back stack, use the page transition animations to do that. All right, now let's talk about commanding. So we've talked about laying out your app. We've talked about navigating around within your app. Now let's talk about commanding within apps. And commanding is kind of a broad concept. It's kind of like, how do you just do stuff in the app, you know, and whatever the app is about doing. And there are a few kind of principles and things we've had about this and a few patterns that have evolved. And here are a bunch of them. And before I even talk about these, I'm just going to say one of the main ideas of MetroStyle apps is that whatever the main thing is you have to do should actually be right there on screen. So, like, if you're the app that's like a media player, have a giant play button, like, right on screen, you know, if that's the main thing you're doing. So you don't have to use some other control to do that. You know, put those right on screen. But in general, for kind of the commanding, you know, to work out, there are a bunch of controls and patterns that we have. App bar is kind of the most prominent of those, but also flyout, settings pane, tooltip, and so forth. Context menu, really, that's great for a lot of like textual things, and we kind of built context menus in for the most part where you need them, so for the most part you won't actually need to use a lot of context menus. You should use app bar and stuff, and you'll see that. And message dialog, I won't show that in my demo, but I will say that it's a modal blocking dialog, so only use message box if you're really trying to like put everything to a halt, like say like cannot connect to server or something like dramatic. It's not for just like friendly little messages to the user. Let's dive into actually see these in action and talk about what they mean and how you take advantage of them. All right. And so for this demo, I'm going to go to, what apps did I say? The mail app. Yes. Woo. All right. Here's the mail app. Now, this is interesting. This is a MetroStyle app, but it's not with a hub pattern and the horizontal scrolling like you've seen in the other apps. But it's still a MetroStyle app, and it uses a lot of the patterns. And one of the patterns I think they do a great job of showing off is the commanding patterns. That's why I picked this app to show you that. So the first thing you'll see is the things that they thought were super important in the mail app are what? Creating a new message, replying to messages, and deleting junk mail, basically. And so they said, you know what? Those three buttons, we're going to put those right on screen. So in the upper right-hand corner right there, you see there's a button to create a new message, there's a button for replying, and there's a button to delete. Okay, so I can delete this message, or I can reply to this message, and so forth. So the most important commands, just put them right there. But it's not like 30 commands. It's not like a whole ribbon's worth of like a gazillion, you know, commands there. It's these things that, like, yeah, people need to do that all the time. Now, there's some other commands people want to do. They want to mark a message as unread. Oh, I didn't finish reviewing these living social deals or something. And so the way to do that is with the app bar. That's where you get kind of more commands on demand. So I just swipe up from the bottom. I get my app bar, and you'll see there are more commands there. Move, pin to start, mark unread, sync, all that kind of stuff. The app bar control, you can use that, and that gives you all the right behaviors of how it comes in, animate, and so forth. And it's very flexible. It can, you can change the commands that are shown there dynamically based on what's selected and so forth. And in fact, another common way of invoking it, instead of the user manually invoking it by swiping from the bottom, is sometimes apps automatically should invoke the app bar. And that happens specifically with selection. So the general rule of thumb for you to think about with the app bar is, if I select something as a user in the app that there's some commands you want to show around, pop up the app bar at that time. So you'll see the mail app did this. I'm going to select some more mail messages. And you can see that as I do so, by the way, the app bar changes. So there's more commands that show up. Now there's mark red, right? You see how that popped in there? Right over here? Because some of the messages I selected are not read yet. So I can mark them all red instead. Or I can mark them all unread. And then mark red becomes the option. But the whole app bar popped up itself contextually just based on my having done a multiple selection, okay? And I'll talk to you about how you do multiple selection when I get to talking about list views and stuff, but I did multiple selection the way you do it, and the app bar popped up. So that's a common thing you'll want to do. So in addition to the user invoking it kind of in the background of the app, have it pop up automatically when someone selects stuff, content you want them to act on. Another example of that kind of selection kind of based model is if I go create a new message and I'm working with text. So let's say I am typing some text like, "Hello world, how are you? I hope you're having a fun tech ed." And I want to select some of this text and make it bold, like I hope. Well, on selecting text, same thing. They popped up the app bar automatically because they knew, the user selected this text, they want to do something with it. So you can pop up the app bar contextually at the right times in addition to just having it available in the background. So I have nothing selected, but I swipe up and I'm like, yeah, I want to start writing text in bold. So I can click that, and then everything I type thereafter is in bold. Okay. So think about the app bar. That's kind of the invocation model of it. That's kind of supported by the platform and built into it. The other thing that's interesting about the app bar is it's smart about its positioning, especially with respect to touch. So if I type, if I'm using touch and I start like selecting content, well, the app bar is smart. It knows to show up above the soft keyboard, so it won't like show up below the soft keyboard or create headaches for you or stuff like that. So if you use the app bar control and the standards controls, they all work smart, with all these kinds of things like soft keyboards and other panes and stuff that might come in. All right. Now, you sometimes can't fit every single command you wanted to have in the app bar itself because it's just a certain, bar. And that's part of our principle of do more with less and, really be focused on what you're doing. But there's some things like picking font color. You need to kind of show that to people. And so for that, you'll want to use, that's a bug. For that, you'll want to use the menu or flyout controls. And so here, it's kind of one of the other controls you can use. It pops up. It shows you the other options. You can pick on them and be done with it. And related to the menu control is the flyout control. And so if I go back to the home screen of this app, you'll have seen in their app bar there was a feedback button. Okay, and that popped up a flyout. And flyouts are kind of like lightweight dialogues almost. They're kind of a surface when you want to show an action to a user where there's some more info you need from them. You can have text fields in there, you can have radio buttons, whatever rich UI you want to have. It's just a canvas you can put whatever you want into, but it's kind of the UI model for these kinds of little, "Oop, give me this information, okay, then I'm done with it," is to use these flyouts. And they're different than traditional dialogues in Windows because there's no close button. There's what we call light dismiss. You just tap anywhere and they go away. So they're meant for these things. It's kind of like someone started doing something, get that input from them. If the user changed their mind, they're like, "Oh no, I don't want to fill out feedback now, actually." They can just tap away and go on with their business. They don't have to, they're not stuck in any kind of state that you've put them in where they have to, move this thing around or close it or manage it or anything like that. It's just light dismiss, very lightweight. And that's part of our, principles about the UI feeling fast and fluid. And so use the flyout control for those kinds of situations. Don't try to create some new weird modal thing to do that. Now, one other thing I'll point out about commanding is that there are a few commands that we actually have a very special place they live in the system, and that's in this thing called the charms bar on the right. And one such thing is how to get to settings. We just want to have a standard place where we get to settings for apps all the time, and so we built that into the charms bar. So you swipe that in from the right and you click on settings. And then, so the mail app has this account settings pane here, for example. So I click on accounts, and this is another control we have, the settings pane. And it's another of these light dismiss things. So I can go here and I can add an account and so forth. It's totally app, controlled by the UI is controlled by the app author, but it has the same model of how it swipes in from the side, so it looks consistent with those charms bars, and if you tap away, it just goes away. So that's the settings pane, and that's a common model for how you want to get to the settings in your application, and that's one example. The other thing is, you want to do there is share and search and some of those other contracts. All right, so that was a bit about commanding. All right. Some of the takeaways there, show your primary commands on the app's canvas itself. We saw that with like the reply button and so forth. Use the app bar, menus, and flyouts to show more commands on demand, kind of contextually, but we want that stuff to be lightweight, so the user's always in control. They can always just tap and keep moving on. If you use the right controls and stuff in building your UI, you'll have this consistent lightweight indication dismiss model. It'll work with mouse, touch, and keyboard, so all those things I showed you. I showed you before the app bar, keyboard shortcuts, and mouse, and so forth is right-clicking in the background. And they'll be positioned correctly based on system context, like as the touch keyboard comes in, and so forth. All right, now let's talk about scrolling patterns for MetroStyle UI. And this is an interesting topic, and this one is near and dear to my heart. Super important in these apps all the time. You have all this content letting people scroll through it. You see me doing this over and over again, is panning through content. And I want to talk about kind of what that model is in general for scrolling and moving through content in Windows 8 apps and Metro Style apps. In the idle state, you don't see any scroll bar. It's just the content front and center. There's no Chrome in the way that's kind of distracting people from just the content you're trying to show them in your app. And that's what you see in that leftmost section. As soon as you start just moving the content either with mouse, either with keyboard or with touch, you just get a little panning indicator. That panning indicator lets you see where you are in the whole space of the content. Am I at the beginning? Am I at the end? The size of the indicator lets you see, kind of like a scroll thumb did historically, how big is the space, you know, how much content is there. But it's lightweight, and it just kind of shows you kind of what's going on. And then if you start wiggling your mouse at all, if you move your mouse over any scroll region, you'll see the full scroll bar. And then you can go hog wild and do all the things you can do with scroll bars. You can click on the arrows, you can drag the thumbs, you can click between the arrows and the thumbs. All those things you're used to doing with a scroll bar, you have that full power of the scroll bar available to you as a user. So this is the overall kind of picture of, at a high level, the scrolling, you know, how scroll views work and scrolling pattern in Windows 8. But there's more to it. There's a lot of detail to exactly how all that kind of panning works. There's panning, there's also zooming. All our scroll views now support full zooming, so you can zoom in and then everything gets bigger, and if your content is vector-based, then it'll still be fully interactive and fully, you know, rendered and rasterized at that new bigger size. So there's zooming. There's something called Rails. This is the technology that enables us, this is kind of what I meant by pride and craftsmanship before, that no matter how you try to pan, it is kind of responsive to that. So most people aren't like perfect about like, oh, I move my finger in exactly 90 degree angle perpendicular to the base of the screen, okay? Most people are parallel to the base of the screen. Most people kind of are a little sloppy about it. And so Rails is all the gesture recognition technology and stuff that we do to kind of figure out what was the user trying to do there? Was it like a 45 degree angle after they did a 10 degree angle this way, or what were they doing? And kind of figure out which way they're trying to move stuff. So that's Rails. There's inertia and there's boundary effects. So if you kind of do a swipe and you let go, it'll kind of keep moving a little bit. When you get to the edges, it does a little bounce, so you know you're at the end of the content if you've been panning. There's things called snap points that I'll show you, so that you can have demarcations within your content where it kind of will naturally fall, or mandatory snap points where it's required to fall while panning. And then all these things support nesting and chaining. And so you can put a scroller inside another scroller. So you can have something scrolling left and right inside something else that's scrolling up and down. Okay, so you can do all this kind of very fancy stuff. And that's all built right into the platform if you just use the scroll views or in HTML, the MS Overflow tags. So let's see a demo of a bunch of this in action. And I'm going to use the calendar app, and I'm going to use the IE as well. All right, let's go take a look at that. Here's my ridiculous calendar. And so one of the things you can see is here you're seeing panning with snap points, okay? So first of all, I can move up and down. So within this month, I can move up and down because it figured out, oh, he's trying to go up and down. If I'm moving sideways, it figures out, oh, he's trying to go sideways. So I can go sideways month to month or week to week in this case. I can go up and down to move, you know, up and down, see earlier or later in that same day. There's some different views the calendar app has. So there's also a month view. In the month view, there's no up and down. There's only side to side. Now you can see as I swipe, it kind of naturally lands so that each calendar falls exactly at a certain point. Okay, that's snap points, all right? So the calendar view, this is actually a giant-ass scroll view that the calendar is using, but they configured it with snap points so that it kind of nicely lands when you're panning at these exact demarcations of each month to give you a kind of very polished-looking experience and has those inertial effects and kind of slowly, you know, falls in there. And this is all doable with just simple configuration of the scroll view control. So Rails is kind of, see how my finger's not moving up and down exactly, it's kind of moving at an angle, but they figured out, hey, this guy's just trying to do this. I showed you the chaining when I did the week view, because I had up and down. It's recognizing that, but that's nested inside something else, bigger, which is going left and right, and so it figured out which is which, depending on the exact gestures you were doing. We saw bounce points, bouncing, snap points. Here's bouncing, so when I get to the very beginning of the day, see how it kind of bounces up there? You'll have seen this all the time using the apps. Scrolling for all this stuff. And then actually what they did for the outer scroll view is they use this thing called a flip view, and I'll talk about that in presenting data, but they put little arrow buttons basically. So for mouse users, that's kind of the easy way to flip month to month when you're not panning with your finger. And you'll see that commonly in lots of the apps that are using a flip view, where they just put arrows that appear on hover for a mouse. All right. So that's some of the chaining. Chaining is, let me show you chaining in IE. I'll show you chaining in IE. Chaining is when you have a scroller inside another scroller, and when you get to the end of it, the inner scroller, it starts pulling the parent scroller, basically. So actually, I don't have any demos of chaining right now. I can probably find some page that does it, but believe me, that's what it does. All right. And IE, I just wanted to show you, because IE is using the same exact underlying scroll view technology we built with direct manipulation and so forth into the system. And so all this kind of zooming that you can do in the browser, the fact that you can interact with zoomed in stuff, and it's high, you know, resolution and so forth, it's, you know, re-rendered at new size, that's all just totally available to use an app developer. So go ahead and use scroll views, zoom into content and stuff, and you can have this kind of zooming experiences, and the content is still interactive at every zoom. It's not just taking a picture and zooming the picture. It's re-rendering it once you complete that operation. So it might be a little pixelated while you're doing it, and then at the end, it'll re-render it and be fully interactive. I use an example of something actually using that. Cool. All right. I can try and find a chaining demo later at the end if we have time or something. You can come up here. We can look for one. So scrolling content takeaways. Use the built-in scroll views to get the right user experience. There's like so much detail to this. I've seen some people try internally when we were like building this stuff. They were like, oh, I'll be smart. I'll just listen to the touch messages myself and like move stuff around. And like, you're not going to get it right. Like, you're not going to get the performance. So behind the scenes here, there's all sorts of fancy stuff that we do where we put things onto delegate threads so that the UI thread isn't blocked during the panning and all sorts of like super fancy fan stuff. And so don't just try and listen to touch messages yourself and pan stuff. If you're doing a panning kind of thing, you really should use the scroll view controls to do that. You'll want to use the touch messages for lots of other things that are great, you know, for interacting with shapes and content and stuff within your app. But for scrolling, I recommend you stick to the scroll views to get that whole experience and the inertia and the performance and all that stuff. They'll all work for touch, mouse, and keyboard for you. They give you that performance. They're kind of the notes on it. And you can configure all these things I showed you, like snap points and boundaries and stuff. All right, presenting data patterns from MetroStyle UI. Well, this is near and dear, I think, to everyone here. There's so much people care about data. And data today, people are showing in apps, can come from the local system. It can be in-memory data, or it can come from web services. We have a bunch of patterns and controls that back up those patterns in Windows 8 that let you have virtualized presentations over that data, so you don't have to actually download all the data to the system. It supports virtualization of UI and data to give you really good performance. And they give you the same these interaction patterns that users will become very familiar with in using MetroStyle apps. So let's look at what those patterns are. At the center of it is that grid view. We've seen that again and again in several apps now. That's a very important pattern for working with data. The list view, that's kind of the up and down scrolling version of the grid view, if you think about it that way. The grid view is great when it's like your whole app or the primary content in your app is about this data that you're presenting. The list view is great when you're in the snap state, or maybe if it's just like part of the content, like you saw in the mail app. Part of the content was the list, but the bigger part of the content was like that reading pane with the actual mail message, okay? And then flip view is for like a one-up presentation of content. So if you're thinking of a slideshowy type of thing or something where you just want to have a one-up view of templated data, flip view is the control to use for that. So while list view and grid view show you multiple items at once, flip view shows you one item at a time. And all of these can be sized, in different ways onto your screen. Beyond just the presentation of them, they have various features that people kind of become familiar with. One of them is grouping. We've seen that quite a bit in the grid view case. Another one is just selection, multi-selection. One of the common things people do whenever they're showing data is they want to select and act on that data. They want to select that customer record and delete it, or edit it, or do something with it. And so there's a common pattern around selecting data items that are built into these controls and these patterns for all the different input methods. And then they give you just a bunch of built-in animations around the things they do. So when you insert items and remove items, when you just load them up, you get a bunch of animations and stuff that are not just kind of eye candy, but they're actually really functional. They help people understand what's going on with their content as stuff is coming in, as stuff is getting deleted, as stuff is getting modified. Then another data presentation pattern that's very important is the semantic zoom. And you see this again and again and again, also in the apps. And this one here is really useful when you have a very large set of data. Okay, so sometimes you have a small set of data and like It's no biggie to like scroll to the end of the beginning of it. But if you have, if you open up, I'll show you in a minute, my people, you know, contact list. It's just like, you know, all your Facebook friends and all your stuff, because everyone's aggregating everything now. It's huge. And a lot of your applications, you know, you're going to have lots and lots of data. Semantic Zoom makes it easy to kind of get a higher level view of that data and then jump into the right part of it. And that's another important pattern for Windows 8 apps. Let's see these demoed, and we'll look at Mail, SkyDrive Store, and the People app to do so. All right. So Mail, I want to just highlight a few aspects about the list pattern, and some of these are these common things that go everywhere. Of course, you get, you know, quite good performance, and all this stuff is data virtualized. So, oh, oops, thanks. See how fast that was? You couldn't even see it. All right. So here you get, you know, very good performance as you're kind of, you know, zooming, you know, panning through here as fast as I can possibly do it. And I'm just kind of seeing all these items. All these things are templated, data virtualized, you know, data. So specifically, whether you're using XAML or HTML, you can use the data binding, templating functions, and so forth. People will be talking about that more in some of the other talks. But to exactly lay out the data you want within each, you know, item the way you want it. But users get that common pattern for kind of panning around it, for grabbing the mouse and scrolling through it, scrolling to the end of it, for mouse wheel, all that kind of stuff is kind of built in. And you also get selection built in. And so the way you select stuff, you can configure it in lots of different ways. The way Mail App is configured it is just tapping selects. But if you want to do multiple selection, they use the swipe gesture. And you'll see swipe in a lot of lists as a way to do selection. And what that is with touch, you just move your finger perpendicular to the direction of panning. So this list is an up and down panning list. So if I just move my finger left to right over items, it'll select them. And if I do it again, it'll unselect them. Okay? So that's called swipe. And it's supported by lists and grids. And you see that again and again throughout the system. That's kind of the default way to, with touch, do multiple selection. And for those of us who are like power users, you know, control click. It's like control click with touch, okay, is swipe. And of course, control click works, though, if you use a list view. So you got that working for free. And actually, for Metro-style apps, right-click does the same thing. So we've kind of updated right-click because of the commanding pattern and the way kind of the UI works. Right-click in lists actually is another way that toggles selection on items. And so it's very easy to do that with a mouse. And as you saw, when I did that, they popped up the app bar. All right, so control click, right-click. And then, of course, there's all the keyboarding. So I can arrow up and down, and I can hit space bar, and I can then hit the control key to move focus without selection, and I can hit spacebar again to multi-select, like all those keyboard shortcuts that you all know for doing crazy-ass things, and I can hit control space and then shift space and various things to kind of create a range selection, and, you know, there's a range selection. All those things that you know and love are all there. We fully support them all and all the list controls with mouse and keyboard, plus there's all this touch stuff, et cetera, the virtualization, and so forth. So that's kind of this kind of general model here in Mail. Let's go and pop open SkyDrive, which I think is a fabulous app. I really like this app. I've been using it a lot recently to like upload my tech ed docs. And so here, they're just using a grid view control. They did the multi-cell size thing here. So some of the cells are bigger than others, these folder ones. If I go into one, you can see that, you know, it's the same selection model. Here, you know, panning is left and right, so selection is up and down. They've implemented various features. And one that they implemented here that I want to show you is delete, because that shows you the animations that you can do. So if I select this thing and I go here and I say delete, am I sure I want to delete? Yes. So you see kind of the animation play. So those, a little hiccup there. Hopefully we'll get that again. So you see those animations in play. So those are built into the view. So if you just do any operations on them, delete, insert, et cetera, you get those animations for free. And as this app here is. And again, this is data that's coming from, you know, the SkyDrive on the web data. Okay, then let's go to the store now. We talked about list view, we showed a grid view, we showed cell spanning, we showed selection, we showed animations. You know, store is another cell spanning grid view. And what I want to show here actually is the flip view control. They actually put it in here. It's one of these nesting cases. Kind of there's a scroll view here, but there's a flip view right in here. And so that's a control that shows you data one up, one at a time. You can see that they actually have, it's templated. So look down here. See where it says the preview includes 3 boxes? And then I go here and it says each box features 9 levels. And I go back here, it says the preview includes 3 boxes. So this is actually you know, templated data where they had a little string they wanted to show and a little, you know, icon, you know, image they wanted to show, and they just hooked that up to this flip view. And as you go to each screen, they hooked up their template to do that in a little delayed animation, the little text update, and it lets you flip through it with your touch, and then you can click on these little arrows to do it with mouse or scroll wheel, or you can tab to it. You can put tab focus on it and then use the left and right keys on the keyboard, which is what I'm doing right now. All right. So that's the flip view. So we did list view, grid view, flip view. We talked about the virtualization, the animations, templating. And then I want to show you semantic zoom. We've shown that in a bunch of places. One of my favorite places to demo it is in the People app. Here's the People app. I have a ton of people here. And so I can just pinch out and then quickly jump to the P's, or I can pinch out and quickly jump back to the B's, or whatever I want to do. Just makes it really easy to work with large sets of data instead of going on and on forever and ever. It's very flexible. They chose to do it alphabetically, but you're not tied to that. Okay? Different apps can do it. You can do it by date. You can do it by whatever you want to put on those representations. It's a very flexible model that lets you just quickly jump around a set of data, however you have it organized. And one of the things I want to point out about the People app is that it's flexible pattern that, again, isn't tied to the exact controls that you have to use. So in the case of the store, they actually are using a list view, grid view control in both views. Here, the People app is using a grid view control in this view, but actually, FYI, for this specific view here, they had this very special phone book style layout they wanted to have where the headers were like embedded in the middle here. And so they actually said, you know what, we're not going to use a grid view here. We're just going to do our own custom view. And so they did a custom view here, but they still can use a semantic zoom pattern with it. So don't hit an edge if you find you have to do something custom. We tried to make sure the platform is very flexible and you can still mash things up and glue things together to get the right experience and the right pattern for customers, even if in some cases you're just plopping our controls in, and in some cases you're plopping one of our controls in and writing one of the controls custom yourself. You can still get the end-to-end patterns. We've tried to make it very flexible in that way for you. And so if I jump back now to the deck. All right. I got a couple more sections to go through. I'll try and go fast. Presenting data takeaways. Hey, these are a great way to make your app shine. You get all these interaction models and stuff. You guys get these points. Richly template stuff, your data or cloud data. Essential controls. I just want to show a couple of these really fast. We have a whole bunch of these for Metro Style UI. They're existing concepts, you know, for the most part, that have been updated. There's some new ones like toggle switch that we haven't had in Windows before. And this is kind of how they look in a bunch of the default visuals. And one of the things that was fun was last summer we had a bunch of interns come on our team, and they all built apps. They were kind of like our first round of internal guinea pigs of, you know, working with a new platform and building stuff. And part of the exercise we said, hey, make sure your apps look cool. Like, have fun with them. Don't, like, make them all look exactly the same. And so they actually styled them. And here are a bunch of different ways they ended up styling the controls as they use them in their apps. Okay, so, you know, again, the pattern is about the interaction, about the, you know, whatever the human brain perceives as the pattern, kind of, to some degree, I'll tell you. And so sometimes you can style things or visually update things or whatever to fit into your app's look, but you still have that interaction, you still have that performance, you still have that feel of the animations and stuff, and that's kind of really what's very important, and that kind of balance of these things. And so this just shows some of the flexibility. If you use those controls, you can still get those patterns. And I just want to show a couple of them in use really quickly that are fun. And actually, I'm going to do that one just using the SDK sample, because it's a really great sample. And I highly encourage everyone to go and install the samples on MSDN. The team spent a lot of time trying to make some pretty good samples for you there. And so in this one here, I want to show you a couple things. I want to show you select controls. This is combo box. Just some of the simple little things we did to enhance this one here for Windows 8 it has kind of a nice animation as it comes in. It's very fast and fluid. It's actually centered around where you tapped, so there's less movement you have to do with your finger to actually select something. So if I'm switching between grape and pear, for example, it's easy to do that. They're smart about long lists. So if I have a long list, all of us have the state thing. Like I've seen a million UIs with like the list of states, and I live in Washington State, so I always have to scroll all the way to the end. But with the Metro style combo box in Windows 8, you can scroll up or down through a long list. And so I can just scroll up to get to Washington, and voila, I'm done. Or if I want to, I can scroll down, you know, all the way that way. So you can go either way you want to go, A to Z or Z to A. So there's just like a lot of little enhancements like that, but it still has the full power you're used to. You know, just want to emphasize, like, if you type, you know, if you like type the letter P, it'll jump to pear, like all those keyboarding things we all know, and like you know, alt down arrow still opens them. And so all the things, you know, all of us power users know and love about all these patterns and controls are fully there, 100%. But they've also kind of been enhanced with these extra niceness and, you know, to follow our principles, to follow our fast and fluid, our pride and craftsmanship and so forth. Work great with touch and you can style these things. The other one I want to show you real quickly here is the range control. And, you know, this is one that we implemented that, you know, there are a few things. You know, there's a lot of flexibility to it. You can do it up and down, left and right. You may not know you can customize the step function. So if you see here it says 0, 4, 8, 12, it'll snap to only one of those places. You can, you know, put those kinds of limitations on it, or you can make it do the whole range from 0 to 100, like whatever you want to customize it. You can customize the styling of it in various ways, but it still has that same kind of interaction model. So here someone showed the tick marks on top. Here someone showed them inside. However you want to do it, you can hide that tooltip. You can do a totally custom-looking thing. But in all cases, you get the same interaction. What I mean by that is things like, what happens if I just tap on it? Well, people can expect something, okay? And so the way we've done it in Windows 8 is whenever you tap, it just jumps there right away. You don't have to go and find the little black square to move it. Like, if you just tap on it, it'll jump there. The other thing we did to kind of make it forgiving of touch, though, is if you tap on it and, like, you don't have to be exactly on the line, kind of like I was explaining with the panning before. If you move down and off the line, it'll still move the slider, and you can be kind of imperfect about it, and does this cool little effect with this line, so you can kind of see like what has capture, you know, and so forth. So there's just some niceties kind of like that. We've really put a lot of time and attention to making sure the details are right on all these kind of little patterns, and hope you'll take advantage of them. And it also kind of makes it really fun for things like multi-touch. It's really easy. One of the guys in the team made this demo, and I thought it was really fun. You can kind of, I like to do this one in the dark theme. There's different themes for things we have. But where you can just plopping together a bunch of slider controls, you can kind of build a multi-touch equalizer really easily. So just using controls, they all support multi-touch and so forth. And so you really want to take advantage of those to kind of make apps that really feel responsive with touch. You don't want to have, oh, I touch here, and then everything else is frozen. I can't touch anything else in the screen, okay? People have 10 fingers. So that's part of kind of the patterns and stuff that you get using the controls. All right, back to our deck. Ah, man. So there are a bunch of essential control patterns. Go check them out. Take advantage of them. Enjoy multi-touch with them. Style them. But you still preserve that fundamental, you know, pattern to how they work that people expect, even if you color them differently or polka dot them or whatever you do. And then finally, the last set of patterns I want to talk to you guys about today is text editing patterns. It's been something that Microsoft has always been, you know, a leader in and known for is how the text editing experience in Windows. And we've kind of brought that forward with touch in Windows 8 and provided some standard patterns for you around that that I want to make you aware of. At a high level, there's kind of what I'll call these kind of patterns of a single line text box, password control, multi-line text box, and rich text. If you have a single-line text box, one of the things you'll see that we've put in there is this little clear button. That makes it really easy for touch users to just like type something and be like, no, just clear that whole thing. For the password, similar thing, there's a little reveal button at the end. It looks like a little key. And if you press and hold on that, you'll see the password show up. So you can see, like, did I type what I think I typed? And then if you let go, it'll immediately go away. So it's very secure. We think it's much safer than showing each keystroke as you type it, because gosh, if I'm presenting, I don't want you guys seeing like every character as I type it. But it still gives you the capability of seeing, hey, what did I type? Did I type the right thing? Et cetera. And beyond just those, at the superficial level, kind of what those controls and what those patterns give you, there's all the behaviors of how the text experience actually works. So there's how you select text with mouse and keyboard and now with touch, and I'll show you that. There's copy-paste, of course, and how you get those context menus. Of course, we have that built in. And we're very excited to say we finally have spell checking built into all the text controls in Windows 8. So you don't have to do anything special. Just use the text controls, and you'll have a very nice spell checking experience with autocorrect and all that kind of stuff. The other thing we have is great integration with the touch keyboard. And that's an important part of the pattern for you to use with text. And so a lot of users will be using touch on tablets and so forth with the touch keyboard. All the text controls integrate with that in a nice way. They pop it up, and they know how to move and so forth for that, and so you'll want to follow that pattern. You also want to take advantage of, you can actually tell us the type of input so that the right type of keyboard shows up. So you can say, oh, I'm numeric data. Well, then we'll pop up the soft keyboard that has the number pad on it, okay? And so I'll show you that. All right, let's switch over. And I'm just going to go really quickly to the store and review this app, Cut the Rope. Perfect. I happen to already be there. So I'm going to type in, I'm going to type in here, and I'm going to start typing the touch keyboard, and I'm going to misspell the word hilarious. Okay? So you're going to see, if I hit spacebar, it's going to autocorrect that. So we've autocorrected kind of built in for all those kind of common typos like that. Hilarious app. You can also go and you can tap on the autocorrected word and you can say, no, stop correcting that because my name is hilarious, spelt that way or something. So you can avoid all those hilarious autocomplete problems people have had. And then you can, you know, I can change my mind. That's not what I wanted to call it. I'll just clear that. Instead, I wanted to type app is contagious fun. Woo. And then I'm like, well, I don't actually like how that sounds, so I'm going to select the word contagious. So I just tap on it. I just grab this gripper to select the word, and then I can delete it, or I can cut it by just tapping again, and then say great fun. So it's easy to select text, go and modify it and so forth with touch, cut and copy and paste. And then I can also, if I start typing the full thing here, I'm going to switch my keyboard, and I'm going to type this is really, I'm going to misspell really, good. And so then you see spell checking, and again, I can go and I can right-click on that and get the right spell checking and so forth, and it has all those other features like ignore and so forth. So there's kind of some great support in the text controls and the text patterns you saw there. If I open the SDK sample around the controls, I think a really fun thing to show is just the text input connection. So if I have a number field, so here's a plain text field, you'll see there's a regular keyboard. If I switch to a number field, I get the numeric keyboard. If I switch to an email input, I have the .com button, and so forth. So you get the right keyboard layout by configuring those controls the right way. And like everything else, there's a lot of styling flexibility. One thing someone thought was fun to do in the demo was to put like the Star Wars effect on the text box. And but it's still, you know, this is really fun. And it still has spell checking even inside there. And I can say really and so forth. So there's a lot of power in the platform and these patterns and so forth. And you can still have fun with it and do you know, crazy fun stuff, but still enjoy all this power. So just to wrap up now, those are text editing controls. I think you saw the kind of the pattern of how that works. Again, don't try to implement your own text editing thing. Oh, I didn't show you rich edit, but there's rich text editing. You saw that in mail before when I colored text and so forth. Spell checking, integration with the touch keyboard. Take advantage of that to do the right keyboard layout. So that's kind of a wrap up. So what is Metro Style UI? I hope you'll leave thinking it's not just a visual skin on stuff. It's a set of common user interface patterns that make apps familiar and productive for users. They're grounded in a set of design principles that we hope make people enjoy them. And they're supported by the Windows 8 platform with controls and other features of the platform that make it easy for you to implement these patterns and have them in your apps. So thanks very much. I'll be around for questions later.